Welcome to Sport and Life with Sam Kekovic and Leon Weegaard. Sam, good morning.
Good morning, Leon. Now, I'd imagine you, like me and a host of others in this wonderful country, tuned on briefly or for whatever period of time to watch the Super Bowl.
Yep.
Now, I don't know what your version, because I haven't asked you yet, but I tell you what, it doesn't do anything for me. No, and look, okay, I might be an ignoramus, don't understand the game in its entirety, but I tell you what, a couple of things I did see. I thought the entertainment package is a typical American bells and whistles. More is better. I thought it was very ordinary. I thought Usher and all those bells and whistles and a million dancers and roller skaters, it is fair dinkum just hollow. And I think that Travis Kelce, I know he's with Taylor Swift, and that's probably a good get. I don't know. They look at their personal lives. But his pathetic performances coming off the field and berating his coach publicly, I thought it was the most reprehensible thing in sport that I've nearly seen.
It looked awful, didn't it?
And how he wasn't dismissed from the field there and then on the spot and made a laughing stock and never to be seen again is beyond my comprehension. And I tell you what, and that's why they could learn a lot from our sport. But how on earth, I don't know how well versed you are on gridiron, but you know, they have touchdown. It's a game that goes for an hour, I think, goes all day. People run out of bounds purposely and they still keep possession of the ball. And then someone runs 15 metres and they're heroes. And the quarterback, Mahomes, he's threw a pass 10 metres and now Lord of the most magical hands in the world. Now, I got no idea, but I'm sure that our next guest could feel the side that would absolutely send them in a catatonic state. They wouldn't even take the field.
Yeah, I don't think there's too much to compare with rugby league and gridiron.
Well, what about the linebackers when they got
a
block?
Well, a different game. How about the round the neck thing where they nearly ripped the
play? Oh, yeah, that was one, yeah.
And that was a good play. They applauded the guy that did it.
There was a linebacker once, I remember reading, I think he played for Philadelphia, called Larry Zonka. And he made one mistake in his entire career. He touched the ball.
Oh.
He was a linebacker, and the linebacker's job is to protect the quarterback, obviously, and just, you know, belt the living daylights out of the bloke coming towards him. And he made one mistake, accidentally hit the ball. What a career that would be, eh?
Yep.
I'm playing footy, Mum. But no, don't watch too much of the highlights.
Well, let's ask a guy that has been involved with football for an awful long time. He is the general manager of football for the Melbourne Storm, the very successful Melbourne Storm. During his time in charge, they've won 4 premierships, been runners-up 3 times, and they're just in there every year. Frank Panisi is the man, and Frank, lovely to have you on the program. And what do you think of the Super Bowl?
Well, firstly, thank you to Leon and Sam for having me on your show. I'm feel very privileged, and I'm looking forward to the chat. Yeah, it was interesting. Sam mentioned about the player that berated the coach. I think that would not happen in our game, and certainly wouldn't be celebrated like it was.
How would bellyache beef if he copped that tirade?
I don't think that player would probably be playing for the club anymore, Sam, so that probably answers the question.
That was just a shocking vision, it was. You know, I really felt for the coach. I felt for the game and the code, to be honest with you, but it is America and, you know, it is what it is. But
The coach seemed unaffected, though.
Yeah, he just almost...
I thought it was a statue.
Yeah, well, he maintained his composure for the duration.
Yeah.
And he was vindicated at the end, of course. He won the game.
My word, too.
Frank, 18 years at the helm, eh? God, strike a light. That's a long haul. Must be some highs and lows, but a lot more highs than ever. The Panisi name, obviously, the derivative is not Anglo-Saxon. It's a bit like Kekovic. It's got a European connotation. Just take us back to the Panisi family tree.
Yes, as you quite rightly say, Sam, it's an Italian heritage. My father moved to Australia when he was in his early 20s, in the early 60s. My mother came out from Italy as a young child that they met here in Australia. So I was born and raised on the northern beaches of Sydney, Manly, and that was born in Manly Hospital, went to school across the road from Brookvale Oval, where the Manly Seagulls, and basically started my career there and got involved then as coaching until I went overseas and got to Melbourne. So, no, very proud of my Italian heritage. We've still got family back in Italy. So on occasion when I get back, I'd like to visit them, and it's an important part of who I am.
What part of Italy, Frank?
The southern Leon, the Calabria. That's where my parents are originally from. I've now got family in northern Italy, but as I said, a couple of probably about 15, before I started the Storm, probably 20 years ago, I should say. I had the great privilege of going back, and my grandmother was still alive, so I was able to take my two sons, which was a real highlight, and to see exactly where my father was born, and in a small village, so to be able to show our sons and see it for myself was, again, one of the highlights.
So, Frank, you'd have close links with the, I don't know which family, the Gottos or the Gambinos or the Corleone family.
Not that I'm aware of, Sam, but...
What, in Calabria you're not aware of? I must have got to the wrong place then.
Now, Frank, you arrived in Melbourne in 2007. Usually there's somebody that would pick a guy like you out. Who was the person at Melbourne Storm responsible? Was John Rebo, for instance, one of those?
Funny story there, Leon, actually. I was first asked to join the Melbourne Storm by John Rebo and Chris Anders when the club was formed middle of 97, and I was actually on my way to be an assistant coach. I was coming down for a chat with Chris and Reeves for a chat, and at that stage they were still not really totally formed, but it was, the plan was to set up a rugby league team in Melbourne, and I'll be honest with you to say that I didn't think a team in Melbourne would succeed. So and it was just at the back of the infamous ARL Super League war, and I was connected to an ARL club. So I declined the very kind offer, and 2 years later I was watching Melbourne Storm do a victory lap of the ANZ Stadium, or back calls the Olympic Stadium, winning the premiership, and I thought, and I was involved in a club that was just about to merge with our arch rival. So that wasn't a real good decision I made at the time. So when that opportunity rose in 2007, I took it. It was through a number of people, probably Greg Brentnell, who I worked with many years ago. He was on the staff. Frank Stanton, who was our CEO at Manly, and John Donoghue. So there was a few people that told me about the role, and I put my name in it, and here I am.
Couple of great men there, Frank Stanton, of course. He was a coach of the North Sydney Bears and also the Australian coach. And Greg Brenton, of course, a Wagga. He could have been a fullback in Australian rules. He was a Canterbury Bankstown. Frank, just a quick one. Your own background in the sport, in rugby league. Who were you with, and ultimately, who'd you coach?
Yeah, I played all the way up to under 21s at Manly. It was, in those days, it was called the President's Cup competition, the lower grades, and that's as far as I've got, which I'm proud of. But and then I went into coaching, and I started coaching in various places. I did a little bit of coaching in the juniors at Manly. I did a little bit of it. You talked about the North Sydney Bears, Sam. I started a bit of coaching in the lower grades at North Sydney Bears, and. But my real kick came in 1990 when I was appointed at the New South Wales Rugby League Academy in Narrabeen. They set up an academy, and it was from there that I basically then had a career in coaching for the next 10 years before I decided to switch gears and head overseas and coach in rugby union for about 5 years.
Pardon me, Frank. Just two things. Anyone that can stay in a position for 18 years, obviously it's testament to your enormous ability in a highly competitive environment. There's no doubt about that. But I guess there's a couple of factors that, you know, makes it more conducive to it, and that is a very stable organisation, some very good people in the background, and some great working relationships you would have with some very, very good people.
Oh, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, people make organisations, people make businesses, and we're very fortunate. We've got a wonderful group of people from the top all the way down to the people that work in the dressing rooms and the property stewards. They're just good people. And a lot of people there have been here a long time as well. So, you know, people hear about the Jerry Ryans, the Craig Bellamy's, myself have been here a long time involved with the club. But we've got people in positions that probably people haven't heard of, whether it's in our strength department, our wellbeing department, a couple of our assistant coaches that have been here just as long, if not longer than myself. So I think when you've got good people and they've been here a long time, they really provide that stability, and more importantly, Sam, that they're able to pass on the legacy of what the club's about. So we've been fortunate to have good people, but also good people here for a long, long time.
You've made the final series every year since 2011. That must be some sort of testament, well, a huge testament to Craig Bellamy.
Absolutely, is Leon. I think, you know, his mindset, he's not one to set, you know, premiership windows or five-year plans. That just doesn't exist in his vocab. He's basically, he's about every week and winning every game. So the start of every season, it's, you know, we believe that we're in there to win the premiership. Your supporters need to hear that. Your players need to hear that. So I think, you know, then it's like anyone else. There's some years, obviously, you've got a stronger squad than other seasons. But, you know, we don't go with any expectations of where we're going to finish fourth or we're going to finish in the eighth. We just go to do absolutely best. And I think that's been the secret. The pre-seasons here at Storm are notoriously tough, and the players are prepared. And an amazing stat that we go into round one. I think Craig is going into his 22nd season and he's never lost round one. And I just think that's amazing to think that after all this time. And I think that's just testimony to the pre-seasons we have. He just basically prepares the players in pre-season for round one. And then after that, he takes them a week at a time. But to answer your question, it's you know, he just gives it a crack every week and every season. And as I said, I think there's no excuses for the players. I think once you start having windows and five-year plans, it sets a seed in players' mind that, you know, we're not good enough to win this year or not good enough to make the finals. He just doesn't do that.
So, Frank, sorry.
I just wanted to get onto a tough point, and that's the rebuilding, if it was needed, after the salary cap. That must have been devastating for those outside of the influence there, but how did you get the players back on deck?
Yeah, certainly a rebuild was required then, Leon, and I think that period after 2010, when we didn't play for any premiership points, lost the premierships, and then we lost an enormous amount of players from that squad to rebuild. The following year, we won a minor premiership and just got beaten in a prelim. I think we'll go down as one of our greatest victories, even though we didn't win the premiership or ever make the grand final. But to do what we did the following year, basically with a bunch of kids, a few players that other clubs didn't want, but most importantly, I think we had three of the greatest players in certainly the club's history, but in the game, and Cameron Smith, Billy Slater and Cooper Cronk, that they played a pivotal role in really gelling that team, the young players and the players with that basically were on here on scrap heap, basically to put them together and have a fantastic 2011. I think that 2011 set the platform for the next decade or so, and had we not had that season in 2011, I don't think we'd be talking about the same success you've just mentioned before, Leon.
Frank, there's a lot to be proud about what you've achieved in the club, but you must be absolutely ecstatic at the way that Melbourne has embraced you, the way that you've slotted yourself in a very competitive environment with the AFL, and to have the membership and the following that you've got now. And in all due respect, without being condescending or patronising, the Melbourne Storm are a fantastic brand in a code that is riddled with transgression, and particularly just over 24 hours ago on the verge of one of your big showcase events in Las Vegas. You see the Brisbane Broncos, you know, now being saddled with an enormous load on their shoulders with Reynolds and what was the vice-captain's name? I just forget now. Having a blue out Fortitude Valley. You know, just on a constant basis, there's always a transgression in rugby league, and yet Melbourne Storm have forever been the pinnacle of, you know, what is regarded as professional behaviour.
Funny thing you say that, Sam, about Melbourne get behind us, and when we just finished speaking about the salary cap scandal, and whilst we had good support before the salary cap, there's no doubt about it, the way the city got behind us during that salary cap season, you know, something that I'll never forget. And in a bizarre way, and certainly you wouldn't want to go through anything like that again, it kind of really consolidated our place in the city. And it's funny, I hear it a lot when you get around Melbourne, is I'll hear people saying, it took me a while to understand what they meant, but I get it now when people will say, look, I don't particularly like rugby league, I'm not an NRL fan, but I love the Melbourne Storm. And I couldn't get my head around that for the first few times I heard that. But basically, whilst, you know, they don't watch rugby league or not a particular follower of rugby league, they love the Storm because we represent Melbourne. So I think That makes you feel good. I think that's, you know, to have that support of the city. We're the only rugby league NRL team in the city. I think it's important. And I think, you know, you've got to give credit to John Rebo from day one. He was never about here to try to take on the AFL, because we weren't going to succeed in that. It was basically, we're another sport. So as well as your AFL team, follow the Storm. And that's the mindset that he took from day one, and it's something that the club has been pushed ever since. And that's why we've got a great relationship with a lot of our AFL clubs over the years. And, you know, but it's the players that come down and the coaches that come down actually embrace the AFL. They've all got their own teams. And they've really, you know, they've really made themselves at home here in Melbourne. I think, you know, you've got to make yourself at home in Melbourne by having an AFL team, and they've really embraced that. So, yeah, we feel that, and I think it's, you know, that's important. We represent Melbourne, and something that we, you know, don't take for granted whatsoever.
Frank, I know you obviously your prime concern is your own four walls, but how disappointing is it when you hear news of the code on a broader level, you know, being littered by those transgressions of what transpired 24 hours ago, you know, because it affects the whole competition, not only as good as Melbourne Storm are, but, you know, you're part of the competition, and, you know, the actions of a few, unfortunately, dominate the majority.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's exactly right, Sam. I think there's no use us just circling the wagons here and saying we're the Melbourne Storm, and, you know, it's got nothing to do with us. It's just like last year when Penrith and Brisbane played that magnificent grand final. We weren't involved in that grand final, but the game got a lot of accolades, and it's one of the greatest games of all time. So, you know, we shared the pats on the back being part of the NRL, but when you get the reverse of that, it's to the last 24 hours. We've also got to wear that as well, which makes it disappointing. So, it's one of those things now. It's again the code, I should say, has made a big bold move to play the opening rounds in Las Vegas with four teams going over to play a doubleheader. So that's what we should be talking about, and hopefully, that's all we're going to be speaking about the next few weeks. You know, ready for that particular round, and when we kick off the following week as well.
Going back to the three players you mentioned before, all iconic names in the game. In fact, iconic names in sport. And they seem to be, I've met them all. And they seem a class act. Is that just a circumstance or luck or whatever?
I think firstly, Leon, they come from wonderful families. You know, their families when they were young players, and then throughout their career were always involved in the club. So I think they've been well. They come from good stock, and I just think the environment that they came as young players. They all came as 18-year-olds to the club, straight out of school. It was a good club with good culture that was, you know, first set up by, as I mentioned, John Rebo and Chris Anderson and those people in those early first years. So, you know, they just took the club to another level, and they were wonderful players, unbelievable leaders of young men who genuinely cared about the football club and cared about their teammates. I think it's they were wonderful players, but we think of more as leaders and role models for the young players who just genuinely cared about everything they were involved in. It was just a pleasure to see them, watch them develop over that period of time. And whilst everyone saw what they could do on the field, it was what they did behind the scenes, whether it was the extra training or the things they did for their teammates, that they'll live in my memory. I think we all remember the great things they did on the field, but it's those things that people don't see that I'll remember.
Frank, of all your wonderful achievements, the one that I think you'd be extremely proud of. Now, in the contemporary game, you can only grow organically, not acquisitionally. So you've got to realise you can't keep buying players and, you know, regenerating your football club by, you know, acquiring players from other clubs. You've got to grow organically, and that means having an academy. When did you realise that, developing some local youth was an imperative to sustain the club?
Yeah, I'm glad you spoke about that, Sam. It's something that I'm really passionate about, and I know our owners share the same vision and the same passion that we want to. We've always, from day dot, brought young players down from whether it's New South Wales and especially Queensland and New Zealand as young players that come into the club. You know, those three we just mentioned came as 18-year-olds. Cameron Munster came as a 19-year-old. Harry Grant, our new captain, came as an 18-year-old. So we've always brought in players from those various places, but probably it's something the club hasn't done as well as actually get more players that come from Victoria, from Melbourne. But after 25 years last year, we only had five players from the city of Melbourne, from the state of Victoria, that have come and played NRL for Melbourne. We just don't think that's good enough. Whilst the pool's not huge, we believe the talent's there. It's raw, but it just needs coaching and it needs some aspirations. It needs some guidance. So by setting up these academies and the programs we're doing, we think we can double that in the next 5 years, get at least another five players in the next 5 years from Victoria, if not more. And I think there's some exciting talent. So I think it's going to be exciting to see more players who are actually born and bred and come through the Melbourne system playing for the Storm.
People from outside of Storm marvel at the capacity they've shown over the years of regenerating after losing a group of good players, great players in fact. Is there a formula for that, or is it just do you use it on a case-by-case method?
No, look, I think it's the culture that's set Leon, and I think, you know, the head coach has got to take an enormous amount of, whilst he hasn't done it on his own, he's got some great people around him, but, you know, he's the driver of the culture, he's the driver of the program. So it's a mentality and mindset. The jersey's bigger than any individual player. So even when you speak about those three players we spoke about before that became known as the Big Three, as wonderful players they were, we knew some stage we had to find players to take their position or take their jersey. So I think it's that mentality that, you know, whilst you can't replace a player like for like, someone else is going to wear that jersey and we've got to prepare for it. And Craig works very much on effort. You know, he'll develop and help a player's skill level and their talent, but what he won't take as non-negotiable is effort levels. And I think that's probably, he gets the best out of players because that's what he judges them on, is how much effort they put in and those effort areas in the game. And I think that's what sets him apart from so many other coaches, Leon.
Frank, on the eve of another season, I guess you get pounded, how's the Storm going? How's this? How's that? You've got 101 things on your desk. You know, you've got a revolving door in your office. You're dealing with the top end of the food chain. Two questions that every supporter would be asking you, anyone associated with this great game. The two names are Bellamy and Pappenhausen. How's he recovering? Because he was the marquee player. He was the blue chip that made the turnstiles rattle. And, of course, bellyache. Is he staying? Is he going? What succession plan have you got in place? Have you nailed him down to another contract? Where are you at with him?
I'll answer the first one, Sam. It's an easier question to answer than the second one. Ryan Pappenhausen is going exceptionally well. He's really turned the corner since Christmas. He, you know, we all know the injuries. I mean, he started with a horrific concussion that he got in 2021. He got back from that. Then he had the terrible knee injury in 22. And, of course, that was a long rehab coming back and finally came back in the last few games of last year and had that horrific ankle injury. But so he's really been hit by three big injuries. So hopefully his luck changes after three. He's training fantastic. We've got our first run tomorrow night, Thursday night, I should say, up in Sydney against the Bulldogs. We're putting out not our best team, but a lot of young players and the odd NRL player that people would be recognisable with. But Ryan Pappen wants to play. He put his hand, he wants to play. And we'd originally had him earmarked for our second and last trial in Fiji next weekend. But he's going that well that he actually put his hand in, wants to play on Thursday night. So we're really excited about Paps. And, you know, he just needs his luck to change. That's all it is. He can't work any harder and he can't be more patient. So I think he's in for a big year. He's just in a great mindset and I think he's good. Craig, it'll be when Craig's ready to make the decision, Sam. He's been going year to year for a number of years now. And but the club's, we're comfortable with it. I think he's coaching as good as I've seen him coach for a long time. He's enjoying it. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes again for one more year, but I also wouldn't be surprised if he says, you know what, I've had enough and I'll get ready for the next chapter of my life. But he's got the support, whatever he does, of us all. We'll always have a plan ready in case he does decide to give it away. But what Craig will do, he'll still be involved in some capacity in the club. So he won't be totally lost when that day comes.
So you tell me you've earmarked a number of coaches to as a contingency in the event of Craig pulling the pin.
Yeah, well, that's ultimately a decision by our owners who do a wonderful job, but obviously they ask opinions of people that, and one thing that seems to be a common thread is the next Melbourne Storm coach will be more than likely, without guarantee, someone that has been in the system or is currently in the system. I think given the legacy want to continue, and I think it'll be a person that's, as I said, been in the system or currently in the system. So there's a number of those who could do it. So, but hopefully we don't have that discussion for at least 12 months, Sam.
What's your membership run at the moment?
Membership's going really well. It's above this time of year. I think the last few years it's been well in the 30s, which, again, from a rugby league point of view, we've got the highest membership any of the teams. I think we hit 40 the year before and high 30s last year. So they're on track to, again, well and truly hit the 30 mark, which for a rugby league club in a city of Melbourne, we're really proud of.
Now, I've also got to ask you quickly. Sorry, Leon, he's got a couple of pings through you. Mick Maguire, how come you're all of a sudden going coaching up in the State of Origin, which is a showcase of your great game, and now you become an assistant coach to Mick Maguire? How did all that evolve? Madge got you up there.
Well, yes. Madge, when I first came to the Storm, as you said, in 2007, Madge was the assistant coach with Craig, and he was here for the first couple of years, and we formed a good friendship early on, and we've stayed in touch ever since. Look, I come from New South Wales. I'm a proud Blue, Sam. I feel like Melbourne Storm is like an extension of Queensland. We have that many players come from
Cockroaches, yeah.
Yeah, from the state, and we've got so many each year. At the moment, we've got Cameron Munster and Harry Grant and Xavier Coates and a fellow by the name of Billy Slater, even coaches Queensland. So we're surrounded by them. But so when I got the call from Madge to come up, and they've having a success for a couple of years, I thought this is a great opportunity. And many, many years ago, I was really, really fortunate and proud enough to be on the Australian Kangaroos tour on staff in 94, 95, but I've never done Origin. So I thought, I'm turning 60 this year, Sam, so I thought, why not? I'll give it a crack and do one more thing that I haven't done, and I'm looking forward to it, to come against, first of all, the Storm contingent and Billy Slater. It'll be a bit of fun.
I can give you one little tip. I reckon at 60 you stand a far better chance of surviving the Origin camp than you would the Kangaroo tour after party.
Well, I was on the tour in 94, Sam, where it was... we played 18 games on the tour, 14 in England and 4 in France, and they went for just under 3 months. So can you imagine they did that?
Was Blocker Roach on that one?
No, he was on the one before, but it was Mel Meninga's last test.
Oh.
And, yeah, there was Alfie Langer and a number of greats. It was, one of the great highlights. So as I said, when this opportunity came up to be involved in the Origin Arena, and especially this year too, Sam, there's going to be the second game is going to be back at the MCG. That just cemented a reason to do it. So to be able to be involved in a game at the MCG, I've been there, since I've been living in Melbourne since 2007, I've been to the G to watch a lot of AFL and cricket and whatever, but to be involved in a game of rugby league, the MCG, I'm actually really looking forward to it.
Still holds the record, the MCG, for the rugby league. And, what do you have there?
The rugby league record?
Yeah, the Origin last game. What did we have, 87,000, didn't we?
I think they've had 87 way back in 94, that first time.
That's right, the first one, yeah.
I think the last one was just short of 90, Sam. So if we can get that again, and I think there's more Maroon supporters here in Melbourne than there are Blue supporters, Sam. So it's going to be a bit different as well.
Frank, before we let you go, we spoke about all those great players and how they enjoy Melbourne and what they're going to be doing after they retire. How about you? Have you got a plan for yourself?
For post
Post the Storm?
Yeah, not too sure. I mean, well, one thing I've done here, I probably, when we, I was from Manly and we moved overseas for 5 years, and I always promised my wife and kids we'll go back to Manly. So it was my wife came down reluctantly to Melbourne, but they've absolutely, they live, they're Melburnians now, so there's no way they're going to leave. So this is where home is now for forever. I still think I've got 5 years left in me in terms of doing what I'm doing, and especially now with the pathways, but ultimately just still connected to the game in some way, and then obviously have a bit more time to start travelling, you know, about this great country of ours, and a little bit more overseas as well, Leon.
Good on you, Frank. And by the way, we do this podcast from Jerry Ryan's pub, the Prince of Wales in St Kilda. He was here this morning. We'll give him a couple of bottles of Michelin wine to get to you. Hope you enjoy those, and we enjoyed having you with us on Sport.
Well, I'll tell him the truth. Hang on, pardon my intrusion.
No, that's the way we'll do it. I'll leave it to Jerry.
Frank, you get two bottles of wine every guest that comes on our podcast.
They get promised two bottles.
Promised two bottles, of which Leon's in charge of distribution.
And the strike rate so far is one guy.
Now, I'll tell you something now. We have had, how many letters now? 22 of demand that we haven't delivered, and three legal letters. Have we?
That's someone calling now for that.
That's someone calling. We've been doing it for 3 years. So far, deliveries two, and there's about 200 in waiting. So, Leon, if you ever pass through Carlton, where's your place of abode, Frank?
Well, I've got a new warehouse.
I'm in Malvern East, Sam.
Oh, Malvern East is another, sort of just a middle-of-the-road area, top end of the food chain. Obviously, you're a negotiator, weren't you, package, Frank? I'll be there for 5 more years too if I live in Malvern.
Well, in terms of the wine, one of the great privileges I've had is meeting Jerry Ryan and his group of friends, and that's where I had the great pleasure to meet both of you, Leon and Sam, and given Jerry's very generously puts on a few lunches every year, we might save those wines for our next lunch.
Good on you, Frank.
Superstar, Frank.
Appreciate the time, and good luck in the storm for this year.
Thanks, Leon. Thanks, Sam. Really enjoyed the chat.
Frank Bundesee, Julius. And next week, looks like Gil McLachlan.
Gil McLachlan back from his little, another one of his jaunt, junkets across to the Super Bowl. But he did, he's promised us as soon as he comes back, he'll be on.
Has he been appointed?
No, but that's in abeyance. It's a given.
It's in the papers. It's double-page spread.
Everyone.
For Rosie.
And what about congratulating our new housing minister, not the housing minister, what's his name? He got appointed by the state government. Jacinda.
Yeah, the guy that's blown every job he's had.
Well, only the Commonwealth Games and also the COVID and. But he got this little joint for $533,000, didn't even go to tender. Well, unbelievable.
Funny game.
Nepotism, we call it.
Thanks for joining us on Sport and Life, and we'll look forward to your company next week.